joint work with my colleague Vipul Goyal and my advisors Rafael Ostrowski and Amit Sahai. This is essentially work in progress, so if everything goes all right and we write up everything in the next 1 week, things should be fine. So consider the following situation. We have, say, a couple of companies, Yahoo, Microsoft, IBM, and some company X, and they all have some data. And unfortunately, this data comes under the attack of an Eve who starts making money out of it. So if these companies join forces together, then they can do something and put Eve into jail. Yet, ideally, Yahoo does not want to come out in the clear and say, my data has been hacked, because then probably the value of Yahoo's share will drop down drastically and then it's in trouble. So what's the standard solution to this? So Yahoo says, let's run multi-party computation to see if all our data has been hacked. But we got a problem here. So company X still knows Yahoo believes its data has been hacked. And even this is enough to bring down the share of Yahoo drastically. So ideally, we want such a situation where Yahoo and company X talk about some normal-looking topic, maybe about the weather. So they just hold this casual conversation. And at the end of it, if both their companies are under attack, then they both get to know that it's true that both companies have been hacked into. But otherwise, if the result is not the case that both companies have been hacked into, or if one of the parties was not actually following this protocol or was just replying casually to the messages, then no one gets to know that a protocol even took place. So this notion is called covert computation and was introduced by Wanan, Hopper, and Langford in STOP 2005. So what are some of the applications of covert computation? So if there are a set of companies who all have some net values and they want to compute if all of them together are capable of buying another company. So they want to compute the sum of their net values, and if that sum is greater than some particular value, they want to buy that company over. So obviously over here we do not want the computation being revealed until and unless it's certain that all companies have enough money in order to buy the company. So even if this computation takes place and then it so turns out that there is not enough money to buy the company, but we know that such a computation took place, then we are in trouble again, because then immediately we know that, hey, some subset of these parties were interested in buying this company, and that might again bring down the share or bring up the share of some particular company. Another, some colorful examples, detecting if a person you're talking to is also a co-spy in the military, in which case we can combine together and obtain more information from the enemy. Of course, if we are not speaking to a co-spy, then it could be quite disastrous. And so on and so forth, maybe rising against some dictatorship, some authority, and if all of you want to rise against the authority, then you go ahead. So what are some of the properties that we like to have in covert computation? So one of them is external covertness. So by this we mean that if a set of parties are running a covert computation protocol, no outsider can tell if they are actually running a protocol or they are just holding a normal conversation or not. We require internal covertness. Not only do we need that no external party can tell if the protocol is going on or not, but we also need that if there is a subset of dishonest parties who can determine if the protocol is being executed or not with advantage epsilon, then every honest party has roughly the same advantage in determining if the protocol was taking place or not. So with advantage epsilon minus delta. We also require strong fairness. By this we mean that if some party can determine the output with advantage epsilon, then every other party can determine the output with advantage epsilon minus delta. So what is the model that we are going to consider? We are going to be dealing with multi-parties. So we are going to be needing a broadcast channel. So all parties broadcast their messages over a common channel, and their messages, of course, depends on the history of all messages. and their inputs. We also need this notion of synchronization. I'm not introducing the notion over here. It was also in the previous paper. So suppose we are interested in computing a function f covertly. We need to know when this protocol begins. So I could be just having a random conversation, but I need to know that this is the message that determines whether the protocol has started or not or something. So for this, we need that if we are interested in computing function f, then the protocol begins with the first message exchanged after, say, 5 p.m. or 3 p.m. or something like that. And typically, this can be given as part of the protocol specification itself. Of course, we need favorable outputs. So we want the output to be obtained to all parties only when the output is favorable to every party. And by this, we mean that we define a predefined set of favorable outputs. And if the computed output belongs to this set, then the protocol then it's revealed to everyone that the protocol took place, and also the output is revealed to everyone. So it's kind of difficult to think in terms of broadcast channels. So suppose I want a protocol which cannot be distinguished from a normal looking conversation. It's kind of difficult to think about it in terms of a normal conversation. So what is a normal conversation? So talking about the weather, replying that it was sunny or anything, it's difficult to think about it in this way. So thankfully we have a compiler that can take a protocol in which messages are all indistinguishable from the uniform distribution, and this compiler compiles it to a protocol in which messages are all indistinguishable from broadcast channels. So if we want to show that a protocol is covered, we need to show that all messages in the protocol are indistinguishable from uniform randomness. So it was shown in the Stark paper how to do it for bidirectional channels, and for broadcast channels also it follows quite clearly.
So what is the model of this thing? So you have access for general distributions. It's like, is it this model that given any history, you have this oracle that gives you next thing, which seems kind of a little bit...
I'm sorry?
So what is the model in general? Is it the same model as the steganography paper from Crypto a few years back?
Right. I mean, using steganography techniques, this can be achieved. If I have a protocol in which all messages look uniformly random, then I can convert it according to any bidirectional.
No, but my point is, I agree with you that it's nice that you would do this, but to me, the essence of the thing would be actually, because I think that the formal definitions don't seem to be natural. The definitions of what does it mean to have a normal conversation. I think the previous definition is that it needed you to have to sample precise next message.
Right, depending on the history and the messages seen, the next message is determined.
So that's the same model. Right?
Yeah, same model. Only thing, we need broadcast channel and not just a unidirectional channel.
Just a question about the definitions. Epsilons and deltas a couple of slides ago.
Wait.
So should we think about these epsilons and deltas as negligible?
So we'd be able to guarantee delta to be 1 over polynomial.
And that's also the case in the previous paper?
Okay, in the previous paper, they define strong fairness as if a party can determine the output with advantage epsilon, then every other party can determine the output with advantage omega of epsilon. It turns out that in the random oracle model, it's possible to realize this. But if we take any implementation of the random oracle model, or if we get out of the random oracle model, then it's impossible to achieve the definition where if a party can determine the output with advantage epsilon, then every party can determine it with omega of epsilon because of the impossibility of simultaneous fair exchange. So it could be the case that if I'm running a multi-party computation, so I just get one bit, say, that is biased towards the output, or I get a bit of the output, and you have not received anything as of now. So in that case, the two advantages cannot be polynomially related. So you've got zero advantage, whereas I've got some epsilon advantage, and these are not polynomially related.
What does it have to do with random oracle?
So in the random oracle model, it turns out that you can achieve that kind of a... that definition of strong fairness, where they are polynomially related. It's just that if it takes me time t to compute the output, it'll take you time, say constant time t to compute the output. So we'll just show that a protocol is covered by showing that all messages in the protocol are indistinguishable from uniform randomness. So what are some of the technical challenges of covered computation? So we need that messages should look indistinguishable from messages drawn uniformly at random, even to the participants. What about zero-knowledge proofs? How are we going to go about doing zero-knowledge proofs? If we want to ensure honest party behavior, we need some sort of a proof that, yes, I did follow the protocol honestly. But if a party proves to another party that he followed the protocol, then the verifier immediately knows that the prover was taking part in the protocol, and covertness is therefore directly compromised. So we somehow need to be able to verify that a party was following the protocol, but we need to do it in a covert manner. In fact, anything verifiable, for example, we cannot use verifiable secret sharing because it will compromise covertness. So some of the technical challenges in this work is quite interesting by themselves. So we look at the previous work in this area. So covered two-party computation was shown in the random oracle model by Vaughan, Hopper, and Langford. Unfortunately, we show some problems with their construction. There are some small technical faults. And even their definition of fairness, as Adam asked, in particular, if the random oracle is replaced with any implementation, then their definition is provably impossible to achieve. But their construction also has some flaws. So our results, we give the first covered two-party computation in the standard model. This is essentially just obtained through old techniques from the same paper and also from controlled gradual disclosure of bits of Cleave and Luby, Micali, and Rakoff. And we also give the first covered multi-party computation in the standard model. This needs some new interesting tricks, and it directly doesn't follow if we have covered two-party computation. Just using the same tricks doesn't enable us to get covered multi-party computation. So what are some of the tools that we need to do covered computation? So we will need covered YAW and covered oblivious transfer. So what do we mean by this modified covered YAW? So Alice and Bob holding inputs X and Y wish to compute f of x, y, with Bob alone getting the output, but with no guarantee whatsoever on the output. So they both run this protocol, and at the end of the protocol, Bob just gets some value. If Alice had followed the protocol honestly and given the correct double circuit to Bob, then Bob would have got the right output of f of x, y. Otherwise, he might have just got some random value. And Bob has no idea whether the value that he got is correct or not. And we would need covered oblivious transfer also. So it turns out that using the oblivious transfer from Nord-Pinkus, we can obtain covered oblivious transfer. I'm not going into how that's done, but it's pretty straightforward.
But what is covered?
Okay, covered oblivious transfer is a normal oblivious transfer in which every message is indistinguishable from random. From uniform random. So we would also need covered commitments. So covered commitments, so the commitment that I give is indistinguishable from uniform randomness.
Sorry, I'm confused. Is a function f is guaranteed to be like very structured or something like that? I mean, just let's say it always starts with half zeros or something like that. Bob will always know if he gets a string which starts with a couple of zeros, he will know. So does it mean that only very, very few functions can be covered? Or?
Right. I mean, if you structure the output, then it's known whether Alice did send the right double circuit or not.
Okay, so this is not the general result. It's just for some very particular function which you need to show how to do the covered.
So for f of x, y, in which we don't follow any particular structure. It's just given as only the output.
These are just tools. We're just talking about tools. It's like the ingredients.
Yeah. So we also need GMW multi-party computation in the honest but curious model. So it turns out that standard GMW multi-party computation in the honest but curious model is covered. So each message in the GMW is by itself indistinguishable from messages chosen at random. So how does covered YAV work? So Alice has input X and Bob has input Y, and Bob should get output f of xy. So Alice sends across a YAV's garble circuit with garble input for x. So it can be made, the garble circuit can be such that every message is indistinguishable from random, and here also the input garble input for x is also given to Bob. They now run a covert 1/2 oblivious transfer in which y gets the garbled inputs for, sorry, Bob gets the garbled inputs for y. After this, Alice gives the degarbling for output, the output wire, and from this Bob can compute f of xy. So covert commitments, turns out the standard commitment of hardcore predicate is a covert commitment. And the GMW protocol for multi-party computation is covered in the honest but curious model. If we replace the 1/4 oblivious transfer that we need there with covered 1/4 oblivious transfer. And that can also quite trivially be realized. So every message in the GMW protocol is indistinguishable from random, but again, it's covered only in the honest but curious model because we have no guarantee whatsoever whether the parties followed the GMW protocol honestly, and whether they did actually broadcast their shares correctly at the end, or whether they did actually run the protocol to completion.
I'm a little bit confused here. Does Alice know what function is being computed?
Yes.
So how does it help you with a problem when Microsoft and company X and the hash data?
So all of them know that, so as part of protocol specification, it's given that if we are interested in finding out if all of us have been hacked, then the protocol begins with the first message after 3 p.m. But Alice does not know whether actually the protocol has started or not at 3 p.m. So at 3 p.m. the first message could be, so how's the weather today in New York? But that does not tell us whether the protocol is.
So basically what you're saying is they're just going to test for this property intermittently. Every 5 hours they check whether they've been hacked or not.
They could do that, but they could have, if they are interested in a set of functions, they could have that as protocol specification and check it whenever they.
Because otherwise you have a problem that you said that Microsoft comes.
Yes, they would need to do this in regularly. They need to do such checks. And that was given more of a motivating example then. So how do we do fair exchange of bits? Just a quick overview. I'm not going into the details. So Alice and Bob, having inputs X and Y, wish to exchange these bits such that no party has a sufficient advantage in determining the bit being exchanged. So how does this work? So Alice sends a bit that is biased towards X with bias 1/lambda. Lambda is of course polynomial, it's not negligible. And in return, Bob then sends a bit that is biased towards Y with bias 1/lambda. And then they keep following this protocol, and it can be shown that after order lambda squared log squared lambda rounds, Alice and Bob's confidence levels about Y and X are respectively 1 minus epsilon, so pretty close to 1. So I'll just quickly go through what is the covered two-party protocol that was presented in the Stock paper. So initially, Alice commits to.
I have a question.
Yes.
So if we are scheduling this computation every 5 hours, mm-hmm. Why do I need covert channels? I know I'm going to be computing this function every 5 hours.
No, you don't know if actually someone did take part in the protocol or not. I could just be sending ordinary conversation messages.
But why don't you
make
it anyway?
You want to hide your participation.
You want to hide your participation. It's part of the protocol, but if I'm certain that I've not been hacked, then I'll never follow the protocol. I will never run the protocol.
So guarantee is the random bits, and then there you don't know if I've been even talking to you or not.
So you went to set computation, so that you just save the few cycles of computer.
So then I participate in the protocol, doesn't matter, we're now in court. And do regular BGW.
No, but then you know that I'm talking to you. I give you zero knowledge proofs, I give you all sorts of things, so you know that I'm talking to you,
yeah.
Right?
I'm talking to you because we're scheduled to talk. 5 p.m., 10 p.m.
No, so the moment is you're all just babbling on the internet and we don't know if we are talking to each other or not. It's broadcast channel. Maybe I'm talking to you, maybe I'm not.
But
what I'm saying is, it's true that they are not in this new protocol, but what I'm saying, why do I need it? I'm saying I will participate in the protocol every 5 hours. And my input will be, no, I'm not in
house. No, so sometimes you want to hide even this. You want to hide if you're talking about to someone.
Let's say that we both have radio
stations.
So let's say you're in Saddam Hussein's Iraq or something, and you're talking to each other, trying to plan your next strike against the government, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a government agent who infiltrates your group. You don't want him to know that you're actually doing these kinds of things. Or at least have evidence that he can use to kill you. Maybe Saddam Hussein is the wrong example, but someplace where you actually need evidence. You don't want to create evidence unless you're actually going to do it. So that you can think of it that way. You don't want there to be any evidence until finally, the decision has been made, a positive decision has been made.
So the covered two-party protocol of STOP 2005. So Alice initially commits to a secret R0, her input to the function that is X, and to randomness that she'll be using.
Is this still honest but curious?
Sorry?
Is it honest but curious?
Oh, no. This was completely malicious. So, and Bob also does the same thing, commits to a secret input R1, to the input to the function Y, and randomness as well. Of course, these are covered commitments. They then run a covered YAV with unguaranteed output. They run two runs of it, such that at the end of it, Bob gets the output f of xy, XORed with g of R0, where g is a pseudorandom function. Similarly, Alice gets the output f of xy, XORed with g of R1, where g is the same pseudorandom function. Note at this stage that both the outputs are completely random, irrespective of whether Alice and Bob did follow the protocol or not, and both of them don't know what the output is. After this, they run a protocol k times, where k is the length of R0 and R1. So they run a protocol such a way that if Bob did not cheat, then Bob gets the output R0, the ith bit of R0. And similarly, if Alice did not cheat, then Alice obtains the ith bit of R1. So I'll get into how we actually realize this, but see that if this is how the protocol is being followed, then we are essentially gradually revealing the bits of R0 and R1 bit by bit, and after k times, when we finish this protocol, both parties can compute f of xy. So how do we ensure that if Bob did not cheat, then Bob gets the ith bit of R0? At the same time, Alice should have no idea whether Bob cheated or not, because if Alice knows whether Bob cheated or not, then she'll know whether Bob took part in the protocol or not. We call the technique gobble circuit verification. So in this, Alice sends a gobble circuit to Bob with input Bob's commitments and the protocol transcript scene. Bob, as input to this gobble circuit, sends an opening to the commitments, input, and randomness. This gobble circuit basically does the checking whether the opening to the commitments are correct and if the protocol transcript is consistent with the input and the randomness that Bob used. And if that's the case, then the output is the ith bit of R0. Okay. Unfortunately, there are some problems with this protocol. So the claim made was, when G is a random oracle, then the protocol is strongly fair. Unfortunately, this is not true. So consider the following situation. So at some stage, Alice has received f of x, y, xr with g of r1, and she's also received the first k minus 1 bits of r1. At this stage, Bob has received the same f of x, y, xr with g of r0, but he has received the first all the k bits of r0. So Bob is essentially in a position to compute the output, but Alice is not. At this stage, Bob quits the protocol. Now what Alice could do is essentially guess the last bit of the seed and see what are the two outputs. But it could be the case that when I apply 0 and when I apply 1, I get two different outputs of the random oracle. So if f of x, y is a single bit output, then Alice has no idea what the output is. Also, if f of x, y is a larger string, then Alice has equal doubt between two output values. Another claim made was when g is a pseudo-random function and not a random oracle model, random oracle, then the protocol is weakly fair. So what do we mean by weakly fair? So we define weakly fair as if there exists a distinguisher that can tell if Alice is running the protocol or not, then there exists a distinguisher that can tell if Bob is running the protocol or not. There are no guarantees about the output of the function being fair or anything, but just this distinguisher can tell if Alice is running the protocol or not. So unfortunately, this is also not true because the hardness of G is not uniformly distributed over all inputs. So for example, suppose given the first half bits of R0 and G of R0, a distinguisher can compute whether the protocol was being followed or not, simply because he could probably compute G of R0. But given the first half bits of R1 and G of R1, he cannot compute anything. So this claim also is not true. So the covered two-party computation without random oracles that we present essentially just uses covered Yau techniques from the paper and also fair exchange techniques from Cleave and Lubin-Mikhailiuk-Rakoff. A point to be noted over here is that possibly covered computation protocols are not composable. So what I'm talking about over here is, suppose we want to call, say, a covered two-party computation protocol as a sub-protocol in a larger protocol, then we are in trouble. Because essentially this sub-protocol is going to gradually reveal the output as well as protocol participation. And if you're going to be doing it as part of a larger protocol, then we are in trouble, because as soon as this sub-protocol gets over, we know that the parties are taking part in the protocol or not, and we know some output of this. So covertness is certainly revealed over here. So we note that possibly covert computation protocols cannot be called as sub-protocols. Let's move on to covert multi-party computation. So just go over a broad outline of what we're going to do. So we're going to run a GMW type protocol with the inputs x1 to xn. And note that we just cannot obviously just broadcast our shares because we have not taken care of honest behavior or dishonest behavior or anything like that. So essentially this output revealing phase is going to check if honest behavior was present in the GMW. And the output of this is a bit that is biased towards the output.
This problem that you said that the last bit is 0, 1,
uh-huh.
If you compute error correcting code of f of x, y, then essentially when you plug in 0, with high probability only one of them is going to be an error correcting code, but that you're saying you reveal participation, I guess. So I'm just saying, what if you encode, instead of computing f of x, y, compute some error correcting code applied to f of x, y plus this thing, would it solve the problem that you presented on the previous slide or not?
The problem in their protocol?
Yeah, well, the first false claim that you said, or it would.
No, because you would learn when you have a good code word, right? And that would let you
all... that's the point. So
yeah.
It fits the problem, no? So you would learn that it's a code word.
No. You might learn that it is a code word before you learn which code word. And so then it would break the rules of the game. You're not supposed to learn that you're playing the game
playing
until
the game
you get the output.
Because
then I'll stop right there, arrest you, and throw you in jail.
Yes.
I was quite clear what the final conclusion was. So there were problems in the original paper.
Right.
And if you change the definitions a bit and use gradual disclosure, then you can actually construct protocols
right.
that are secure.
Right.
For
two-party.
And now you're going to tell us about the multi-party. But
right.
But then are the claims about the random oracle model, are they recoverable? I mean, are they?
Yes.
Are they, you know, necessarily false, or is it just the proofs in the paper?
No, it can be repaired. So for example, if initially both parties commit to H of R0 and H of R1, where H is also a random oracle.
Mm-hmm.
Then if some party quits at some stage, then I can check what the value of R0 is by just guessing. And so this takes me a little bit more time. It takes me, say, the amount of bits that I've not yet got, that much time it takes me, but yeah.
So it's more like this kind of time commitment. You need some you're saying if you add some kind of verifiability property,
right.
then
it's repairable. It's repairable in the random article model.
Okay, so I guess I think that's what Yevgeny was trying to say.
Oh, okay.
Maybe just the particular suggestion he had didn't work.
Okay. Yeah, those things are repairable.
Okay.
Yeah, but we were just interested in removing the random article model together.
No, all right, I was just trying to understand.
Also, this result on the multi-party computation can also be stated in terms of random oracle if you wanted to get some different kind of stronger.
Sure, if you want to use things that don't exist.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So at the end of this stage, every party gets an output that is biased towards the output with probability 1 over lambda. And then we're going to essentially run a sequence of these for m times. So the next stage, essentially, you run another GMW protocol, which takes in as inputs. And we need to pass over some check values that make sure that every party was honest up till now throughout the protocol. So we pass some check values. I'll get into how we do all this. And then at the end of this stage, we again get another bit that is biased towards the output, and so on and so forth after m stages. We have a set of values from which we can compute what the output is. So if everyone was honest, every party obtains a 1 over lambda bias towards the output and party participation at every stage. So we note that if all parties were honest till a particular stage E, and then some parties became dishonest, then after that stage, everything becomes random. So for example, If I have an honest party who has got correct T minus 1 shares, and then someone becomes dishonest or does not follow the protocol, then I'm going to get completely random values. But note that a dishonest party could get only one more additional correct output bias. So you could have got only T correct value. After which, everything again becomes random for him as well. So just a brief reminder on GMW. So parties break their inputs into n shares, relatively. And they compute each gate by gate. And at the end of it, each party obtains an additive share of the output that he broadcasts. So again, malicious behavior in GMW. How do we make sure that the GMW was followed correctly? So maybe we could have what we did in the two-party case. Maybe we could ask PI to give the share to PJ only if PJ was honest. Okay. So let's just remind what we were doing in that. So we're using this garbled circuit verification. And basically, Alice and Bob were making use of a garbled circuit to verify if Bob had behaved correctly, and if so, give him a correct share. So does this solve the problem if we use it in multi-party computation? So unfortunately not. So what are the problems we see over here? So essentially, this garbled circuit could be completely bad. There is no guarantee that the garbled circuit was prepared correctly. So what is the problem with that? So in in multi-party computation, we essentially need to broadcast a function of the output or the output itself. So, and now if we're going to feed in all our inputs and randomness into a garbled circuit that could have been prepared maliciously, essentially the output could be anything. It could be some bit that reveals that I was participating, or it could be even be my input. So in some way we must prevent this. So with the following important trick, we ensure that a dishonest sender cannot force the output to depend on the receiver's input or the randomness value. So a new trick that we use is doing covert zero knowledge to the garbled circuit. So what is essentially this? So a prover proves to not to the verifier that he behaved honestly, but he proves in zero knowledge to a garbled circuit generated by the verifier that he was honest. And the properties are such that if the proof is correct, then PJ receives a correct value V. And if the proof failed, then he receives a random value R. So note that the verifier has no idea whether the proof given was correct or not, because the proof was given to the garbled circuit and not to the verifier. A dishonest verifier learns nothing about the prover's inputs, even if he's going to broadcast the output of the garbled circuit. So can't we just use covert two-party computation to do covert, so zero knowledge? So essentially we are just computing a function and checking if that function is correct, and if so, we are outputting a value. So can't we just use two-party computation? So unfortunately we cannot, because we need to use covert zero knowledge to garbled circuits as a sub-protocol in our multi-party computation protocol. And unfortunately, two-party computation protocols are not composable. So we cannot just make use of covert two-party computation to do this. So how do we do covert zero knowledge to the garbled circuit? So essentially we have the verifier or the sender who has a secret message V and a random value R. And we have a prover or a receiver who essentially wants to prove that an NP statement S is true. So how do they go about doing this? So the verifier breaks V into Q shares, where Q depends on the security parameter. We essentially need to do this in order to get exponential soundness. And then favorite zero knowledge protocol, in which the prover commits to a permutation of a graph that has Hamiltonian cycle and also commits to the permutation itself. The verifier then sends a bit 0 or a 1 depending on whether he wants the prover to open to all edges of the graph and the permutation, or whether he wants the prover to open to just the permuted Hamiltonian cycle. And then she also sends a garbled circuit along with inputs required to check the proof. To this garbled circuit, the prover essentially sends his proof. So the last message of the zero knowledge protocol is not sent directly to the verifier, but this last message is fed in as input to the garbled circuit. So this garbled circuit essentially now plays the role of the verifier. It can do all the computation that is needed to check the proof. Now, since it has the inputs required to check the proof itself, it checks if the proof is correct, and if so, outputs a share of VVD. And if not, it outputs a random value RD. Now if this protocol is repeated Q times, Bob can receive the value of V by XORing all the values that he obtained. And note that he gets the correct value of V only if he was honest in every round of the protocol. So even if in one round he cheated, a random value RD comes in between and he gets a wrong output. So we want to obtain proof of knowledge property in this, and this can be achieved through standard tricks. So basically the prover takes the witness, breaks it into two shares W0 and W1 such that the XOR of two values is the witness, and commits to both these values. When the verifier then gives the bit 0 or the 1, the prover responds with WB alone, and then the zero knowledge protocol takes place as earlier. So that essentially now the simulator can rewind and get the extract the value of the witness. So now we get into some messy details about how we combine everything that we have now to get a covert multi-party computation protocol. So we have an initial commitment phase. We then have a computation phase where we run a round of the GMW protocol. Then we have an output revealing phase where we check if the computation phase was run honestly. And this has to be repeated R lambda squared log squared lambda times. So in the initial commitment phase, party PI broadcasts a commitment to his input XI and to randomness RI. So what is this randomness RI? This is the randomness that is used for oblivious transfer and for secret sharing when running the GMW. We also have a randomness that is used by the GMW circuit. So now essentially this GMW protocol needs to output a bit that is biased towards the output. So it needs to have some randomness in order to output a bit that is biased towards the output value. So our GMW is this randomness, and this will be generated by all parties together. So PI also broadcasts a share of this randomness, a commitment to the share of this randomness. I'll just describe the first computation phase now. I'll push the remaining after I talk about the output revealing phase. So in the first computation phase, the GMW takes as inputs x1 to xn. It also takes in the randomness RGMW. And then it checks if the function output is favorable. So remember, we need to check that if the output is favorable, should the output be revealed to all parties. So it essentially checks if the output is favorable. And if so, it outputs a bit that is biased towards the output. Otherwise, it just outputs a random value. And note that we are not doing a GMW up to the broadcast. So at the end, parties hold shares of this output. So how do we do the output revealing? So at the end of computation phase, party PI has a share of the output OIT. He basically splits it into n shares. And using covered zero knowledge to garbled circuit, PI gives PJ the share OI JT if and only if PJ behaved honestly in the protocol till now. So here the NP statement that PJ needs to prove is, given the commitments of PJ and the protocol transcript over the last round, there exists opening to the commitments, inputs, and randomness such that the commitments and protocol transcript were valid. So essentially what we have done is, so at the end of the computation phase, after splitting the output share into n shares, party PI essentially has all these shares across this row of this matrix. And after the output revealing phase, he holds shares across the column of this matrix. And from this, he computes the XOR of all these values to obtain a single value, OIT. This is not yet the final output, but it's a share of the output. He now broadcasts the share, OIT, and after he has received all shares from all participants, he computes what he believes is the value of the output at that stage. Note that there is no guarantee that the output is correct over here, because parties could have just broadcasted any random value over here, and in that case the output will not be correct. So he obtains a bit that he believes is the output at that stage. So we have not yet performed a check that this value is correct. We do this check in the next computation phase. So C2 essentially checks if C1, the output of C1 and the output revealing phase 1 was correct. So C CT essentially takes as inputs x1 to xn. It also takes in randomness to the GMW protocol. Note that once it takes these two, it's now in a position to compute what the correct output of the previous state should have been, because it takes in as input all the inputs as well as it takes the takes the randomness. So it's now in a position to compute OT minus 1. It also takes in what every party believes the value of OT minus 1 is. So it takes in n values which correspond to what every party thinks the output at the previous stage is. Now this checks if everyone has got the correct output and the output is consistent with what should have been the right value that should have been broadcast, that should have been outputted earlier. And if this is the case, then it outputs the correct output at this stage. Otherwise, it's again random values. Again, at this stage, at the end, parties hold only shares of this output and not output. And then we again have the output revealing phase of this particular stage. So that essentially completes the protocol description. So to summarize our results, we obtain covered two-party computation in the standard model. We also obtain covered multi-party computation in the standard model. Apart from these, we develop some interesting techniques such as covered zero knowledge to garbled circuits that might be of interest even independently without even seeing what covered multi-party computation are. Thank you.
If you have time, you know, can you just show this, like, the verification from the stock paper? Like, they replace zero knowledge proof at the end with some with a funny round or openings and
right.
Sense the commitments. Could you like show the slide again?
Sure.
So why is this one?
So I'm actually hiding a few points over here in the sense that suppose I verify that Bob was correct up to this round, then at the next stage I don't need to send the entire protocol transcript as of now. I can just have a state value and I can check if the state value obtained by Bob was correct. So at every stage I output random the ith bit of R0 and I also output a state value. And now at the next stage, Bob has to input this previous state value into the circuit, and that checks whether both values were correct. And if the state value obtained is correct, then that means, yes, he has been following the protocol honestly, and then it gives him the next output. Did I answer your question?
But okay, because I forgot the context, already, so... Sorry.
I can talk to you.
Yeah, thanks. It's not a problem. It's fine.
Yeah.
So it seems this garbled circuit verification is kind of a big idea from the stock paper.
Mm-hmm.
Is it useful? Can you think of any useful applications of it sort of outside of this cohort? You know, if I wasn't doing things covertly, is it a big idea that's bigger than this?
So we were actually thinking about how we could use our not the garbled circuit verification, but covered zero knowledge to a garbled circuit. So maybe we could somehow do conditional oblivious transfer for any NP statement. So basically, check if some function is evaluates to a particular value, and if so, then the receiver gets the output. Otherwise, he just gets a random value. So I could specify if I have two values, then I could place one on if the function evaluates to one, then I get the correct value. And if the function evaluates to not the correct value, then I could output that value.
And this isn't doable for usual techniques.
Covered.
Yeah, so. Can you repeat in a couple of sentences? So, like, how does covert zero knowledge proof work. So how do you prove something without showing that you're doing?
So that is what. So I'll just. So over here we see that the proof of the statement is never known to the verifier, right? So essentially the verifier never knows whether the proof is correct or not. In particular, he doesn't even know if Bob was following the protocol or was just outputting some random message. If he was following the protocol and if the proof was correct, then he just got some value, but Alice never knows what value Bob actually got.
But Bob is prover, right?
Yes. So again, Bob also does not know if the protocol is being followed or not by Alice, because all messages are indistinguishable from random.
Right. But why is it
so? So Alice need not be convinced, but the gobble circuit generated by Alice is convinced, which gives out the right value. So suppose I want to give you a value, a bit B, and I want to give it to you if you prove to me some statement. And I don't want you to, and it should be the case that I do not know whether you are able to prove the statement correctly or not. Right? So I can achieve it using this. So I give you this gobble circuit, and I also input whatever output that I need to give you. And then you basically complete the proof. And if the proof went through, you get this bit B. Otherwise, you just get some nonsense. Now, at the end of this, I have no idea whether your proof was correct, whether your proof was wrong, whether you got the right value or not. Just gets random values.
So, but she doesn't. Maybe she'll think. Does she know that it's a random value that no one else participated in, or does she? Could it be that someone else participated, but it just gave this?
So, if you're doing this gradual disclosure, then at the end of the protocol, she's going to get bits that look completely random, and now she has no idea whether people actually did follow the protocol or they were just doing just a normal conversation if they were just talking normally.
But let's say that we're computing comparison. So I'm just interested, you know, is our two companies more than some value or less?
The sum. Yeah.
Right? So at the end we get I get either a random bit if you didn't participate, or I get the correct bit
right.
If you did participate. But
if I did participate,
zero or one.
No, I get a correct bit. If I did participate and the sum of the two incomes was greater than what value I wanted to.
So you can also artificially add to the output to make it distinguishable from random, if you wanted to, right?
Okay.
So on the other hand, you might want to say, well, I'm just going to flip a collective coin, and I don't really know at the end whether I actually did it or whether I just got a random bit, right? So you might imagine that might be useful. I don't know. That could be another application. But if you wanted to make sure that you could distinguish between a successful, at the end of the day, a successful run or not, then you can add some structure and then you would know. But again, if it wasn't a favorable output, then it would just look completely random. You wouldn't have any idea that anything happened.
Favorable meaning not participating. So if we are participating, and both of us are participating, and then let's say you get gradual disclosure of 0000 if you're richer than me, or 111 if you're poorer than me. But if we are not participating, then in the end of the day you're just getting random bit, and you have no idea if I participated or not. You just see these bits from me, and you don't know if I participated or not. That's it.
Or you can think about, so there are these gangs that are thinking of joining together, and they want to compete whether they're powerful enough to take on the military if they combine forces, right?
Okay.
So you could have it that the output, if they are, then the output is well-formed and you see that it is. If not, then it's just random. It's not a favorable output, so no one will even know that any competition took place. So that you can imagine situations like this where it could be useful.
So to use it, you actually do suggest to encode the outcome in the error correcting code, if you want to use it.
Or just in output 0000. That's another value.